goalie data is actually really cool. Dave Flint worked with the U.S. national team before coming into Northeastern. So he's used heart rate stuff before. And he goes, you're going to look at the goalies and think, what the heck is going on inside their brains?
Welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast, where we talk with coaches and sports scientists to explore the latest in how performance monitoring is making a difference in the NCAA and pro sports alike. We're going to connect you with practical advice from the best in the business to help you take your athletes to the next level. Katie DeLude joined Northeastern Sports Medicine staff in 2014 and is currently the coordinator of care for women's hockey. She is also responsible for coordinating sports performance staff education courses, conferences, and sponsorships. Prior to arriving at Northeastern, Katie completed her master's degree at Texas State and her bachelor's at Springfield College. She also did an internship at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. Katie is a corrective exercise specialist through the National Academy of Sports Medicine and a member of the National Athletic Trainers Association. Now let's turn it over to the head of First Beat Sports USA, Benjamin Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Katie DeLude, who is currently the head athletic trainer for Northeastern Athletics. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today, Katie.
Thanks for having me.
How's life in Boston at the moment?
Things are getting a little better. It's getting a little warmer. So starting to enjoy it a little bit more. You're starting to see more people in the streets.
Okay, that's good to hear. Before we dive into the questions, it would be great if you could give the listeners a bit of background about yourself and your career to date.
Sure. So I graduated from Springfield College, born and raised in Massachusetts, and then went to school in Massachusetts. And my professor said, get out of here. I said, all right. So I went down to Florida for an internship for Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. It was a bunch of pilots and astrophysicists, like rocket science. It was awesome. They're so cool. And it was right by the beach, so that was pretty cool.
Wow.
And then I took a job at Texas State as a GA and worked with the track program there. Got my master's in athletic training as well. And then I was just applying for any job and kind of stumbled upon Northeastern and moved back up to Massachusetts.
Cool. Was it kind of always the dream to get back up to Massachusetts, or were you pretty open to go other places?
If anyone knows me, they know that answer is absolutely not. My family was pretty happy, but I don't like the cold at all. So it was definitely worth it, worth the risk. And I've had a great time ever since.
Excellent. Well, I kind of did the same thing. I didn't like the cold either. So I went to college the first 2 years where it was warm. And now I've been 17 years in Finland where it kind of gets a little bit cold. So
just a little bit.
Yeah. So we're on the same boat. Well, first off, I have to say congratulations on the season. 31 wins, a trip to the, I guess I would call it the final four of the Frozen Four. Well done and congratulations.
Thank you.
And kind of what year was it when you took over doing like the athletic training duties for the women's ice hockey program?
So I started the second I got up to Northeastern. I had no idea what sport I'd be working. Again, it was just kind of a roll of the dice with a job. So since 2014, I've been with the women. And keep in mind, I went from Texas track to Northeastern hockey.
Okay.
Bit of a swing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've been with them since day one.
Okay, cool. I guess you might have slightly different programming for the track athletes versus the ice hockey athletes.
A little bit.
And so when you started to work there, you worked with Michelle Boland for a few years. Kind of how was that experience?
Oh, man, Michelle's awesome. I can't say enough great things about her. Thankfully, it's growing where you have a female athletic trainer and female strength coach and we're working with the same team. So it's pretty great to be able to say that we've been able to do that. Michelle's recently left. She works in the private sector and she's doing awesome things for strength conditioning and growing that field now. But great time with her.
Cool. Yeah, I've noticed she's still in the Massachusetts area, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I guess we also have something else in common. So you're able to actually do some research while working with Michelle. We're both authors in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning now.
It's a great club.
Yeah, it is. Well, for me, mine was a one and done, so.
Same.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully not done.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually going to touch on that here. What did the research entail? So the title is, it's a mouthful, but I'm going to try to get it right here. Relationship between physiological off-ice testing, on-ice skating, and game performance in Division I female ice hockey players.
Yeah, it is.
So could you give us a little bit of kind of what was that research about and like what was maybe the most practical application you could get from that?
So the title says exactly what it is, which is pretty cool, but it's a mouthful. So we use things like bench press, trap bar deadlift, counter movement jump, and then we threw in max inspiratory pressure as measurements of off-ice testing. And then we had a awesome skate test that our women are traumatized by. We measured things like fatigue index on the first little bit of the skate, like what's the drop off and then what's the drop off by the end of it. And we saw our coolest thing that we saw was max inspiratory pressure had a strong correlation with assist points and like shots on goal.
Oh, very cool.
And we just used this barometer. Yeah. But we found that if you have increased strength, you can promote better skating times, which was pretty cool as well.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, pretty simple test in terms of like the X's and O's of everything. And the correlations you'd assume, we just kind of put it in research.
No, I think that's valuable because I think people might say that, but they don't have anything to back it up. So it's nice that you've got some data to show that, yes.
Yeah, this
I would guess for athlete buy-in, that's probably pretty good too, because of course they're listening to you because you're certified AT or strength coach. But then if you can also say, well, look, this data proves if you're stronger, you're actually going to be faster and better on the ice skating.
It is nice when we can just kind of hold up that paper and show it to some teams and they're like, oh, okay, I guess we'll do that.
Nice. So I guess you kind of already answered it, but I was hoping, you know, are there any more research projects in the works that we can, you know, be looking forward to?
Yeah, so we've been tracking menstrual cycles and phases, and it's all optional right now. But I'm working with our PT department in Bouvet in Northeastern to correlate menstrual cycle phases and injury rates.
Okay, very cool. That seems to be, say, do we call it a hot topic? I've seen a lot of devices, yeah. Especially even Garmin is coming out with stuff that's completely focused on menstrual cycles, other factors related to the female athlete.
Yeah. So we kind of went off of US Women's Soccer. They have a ton of data out there and we're using that right now. We're using it as individual needs and variations in programming and recovery. But now we're digging into, okay, where do we see a lot of injuries? How do we want to utilize joint laxity periods or do we want to stiffen up that joint laxity period depending on the athlete and hopefully prevent injuries?
Wow. Excellent. On the past few years, so Northeastern women's ice hockey has had some serious success. Let's say the past four seasons, four straight conference championships. What exactly did you put in the water before the 2018 season? What's the secret sauce at NU right now that's got things working so well?
Well, we're now on five championships in a row.
Oh, so wow.
That's been pretty cool. Yeah. Got a fifth this year. Filled out the hand with the rings. Honestly, we put first beat in it. And that's not a plug that you told me to put in here. It really is. We started using the research that we ran with first beat and our coaching staff is just world-class. And they listen to it. They listen to me. They listen to our strength coaches. It's been on top of using data, I think from all of our staff with the coaching staff and support staff. A lot of just hard work, reflection, and then a calming drive that everyone's invested in. We have great locker room culture as well. The girls, they self-regulate each other really, really well.
Well, I'm not going to say I do appreciate the plug, but also the fact that, you know, First Beat could play a role in this success. That's always nice to see. But I think you highlighted the most important part is communication between the staffs that you could have $50,000-$100,000 worth of tech and tons of data points. But if you can't translate it and there's not communications both ways, it's pointless. And you've got tons of data points that are not going to be actionable. They're not going to be used in any way. So that's huge. That's great to see such communication between staffs.
It's amazing. I have the best job in the world.
Great. And kind of on that same topic then, there weren't really any personnel changes then. It just seems like you guys made some adjustments. Are you able to address, like if you have concerns or if you see some stuff in data, are you able to give feedback that might actually, they might adjust practice or the training sessions?
Yeah. Well, we have had a couple personnel. We're on, since Michelle left, we're on our third strength condition coach. We had Tim O'Terry, who was awesome, dove right into everything we do. And now we have Jeff Ebbs this year. And he worked with our new, she's not really new, but assistant coach, Lindsay Berman, who's an alumni of Northeastern, which is awesome. So she's just world-class as well. So Jeff and Lindsay actually used to work together and now we have them both. And really like for personal changes, it's all, we're just growing. It's phenomenal. What was the second part of that?
Do they actually ever make adjustments accordingly? If you come and say, hey, data is showing this, we need to pull back. Do they actually maybe make adjustments like that?
They make adjustments all the time. Dave Flint, our head coach, was actually an athletic trainer for 7 years before he started coaching.
Oh, okay.
He's a fellow geek and it's awesome. We get to talk shop all the time. He gets to dive into it. It's just a lot of fun for him as well. So he actually comes to me with a lot of things before I get to it or Jeff gets to it. So it is pretty cool. It keeps us on our toes. It's definitely a group effort. It's not just the sports performance department running this data.
Yeah, that's almost cheating that he was an AT before. So you guys already...
It is.
You speak the same language and you don't have to try to explain anything. Wow. Okay.
It is. I don't explain anything to him. If anything, he explains hockey to me.
See, now it's making more and more sense why you have the best job in the world. I can see this. It's just getting better and better here.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome. Like, they're a well-oiled machine and Dave makes adjustments up and down and however we need, off days, harder days. And he uses this data and builds out his practice plans around it.
Very cool. Jumping over to a different subject, lovely social media. Within the athletic trainer, strength and conditioning community, let's call it, is social media helping or hurting right now?
That answer is a little bit of both, but if you're going to put me in a pick one column, I'm going to say it's hurting us. We can't grow with these quick fixes that get posted. Like, I can't learn in 30 seconds what I want to learn. What I can do is take that little tidbit that's given to me and dive in on my own. But We're starting to lose that research apps aspect or just invested interest in diving in and learning on your own. Like, get to do things on yourself before you learn how it feels for the athletes. And I think it is hurting us. Like, there's no connection. You can't teach drive or motivation or research or connection successfully through social media.
No, I think that makes sense that, we've said this time and time again, but you know, if you're doing this just because you saw so-and-so do it on social media, that's probably the worst response you could ever give. Even if it's someone who's well-respected, go do it on yourself, work it into your program to see if it's actually effective or not.
Yeah. My advice is find the person who said that, reach out to them, have a conversation about it, and then you can get to learn.
Yep. Exactly. So within the program, your role is defined as the coordinator of care for women's hockey. Mm-hmm. Kind of how many hats are you wearing with this role? Walk us through all the aspects of the program that you work with.
Coordinator care is simply just a title, meaning we have an athlete-centric model where it's athletic trainers, physical therapy, strength conditioning, coaches, sports psych, nutrition, our physicians, and a million other things that that incorporate a student athlete. So my job as a coordinator of care is really just to quarterback and help them out and just say like, okay, this is might be where you need to go next in your journey. This is where you should probably be reaching out in the next stage of your journey. Hey, don't forget, like, you have class, yet you might have an injury. So we have to work together with their academic advisors. And all it is just organizing some of their life. They have a lot of say in it. They're expected to come to us more than we go to them as part of their growth as a college athlete. But a coordinator of care is really just to help them quarterback that. Mm-hmm. A lot of what I do is basic healthcare, rehab, organization, hanging out in lifts, modify some things as needed, working really, really closely with the strength condition coaches so that, like, if Jeff has a goal for strength day, I know that it modifications, him and I are going to talk through it and make sure we have the same goal, just at a different level for somebody who might be injured.
Okay.
Then the classic, you know, shoulder to lean on if they're having a tough day. You just, I don't know what it is, but globally, the athletic training room is just like a safe space for people. Sometimes you just get athletes that are like, I just need a second. You're like, okay. And then they're good.
Okay. It's not a terrifying place where they get, you know, the tape ripped off and have to get right into the ice bath.
It can be, but we try to make it at least an inviting culture. I always say, like, I'm not here to take you out of games. I'm here to help you compete in them. That's our sports performance model. Like, sometimes it comes at a cost where you can't participate in a practice or a game. but it's all to make you better in long term.
Nice. So it sounds like the coordinator of care, almost your quarterback position, it's actually like, I don't want to say it's a good problem, but it's a good problem to have because you've got so many people involved that you've got medical, you've got the physio, you've got athletic trainer, strength coach, nutrition seem to all be on the same page.
Yeah, so many people. Like we meet weekly. That way, like everybody knows kind of what the next step is. Like just kind of sit, have a roundtable discussion, go through the roster, make sure everyone's knows what's next for each person.
Okay. So the success that you're having is it's all becoming more clear and clear to me, I think, with the more I hear here. Talking about that success, after winning 31 games this past season, you've got 16 seniors, graduate students on the roster who would be moving on. How do you replace that? That's over half your roster.
You're pulling at my heartstrings here. You don't replace them. Be a little sad, be like, they can't be replaced, those women. But you trust the leadership of the coaching staff, of the locker room, and you embrace the culture and trust that the coaching staff and the women have built. And you learn how to build through what each new individual is bringing.
I would assume that the success that you had or you've had has really helped the recruiting trail as well. So it won't be maybe such a big deal to replace.
Yeah.
I guess I shouldn't say replace. I guess you have a lot of spots to fill. I guess that's a better thing to say. You've got some openings to fill. We'll say it.
Oh, we have some job openings for sure there.
With your program, is there more of a focus on these incoming freshmen that you can get in the system and kind of develop over the years? Or are you big on grabbing these transfers that can have an immediate impact? Kind of what's the process there for Northeastern?
With the COVID-19 pandemic, anyone who was in college athletics at that time has been granted a fifth year, we call it their COVID year, to play. So normally you have 4 years to play in a six-year window. I think it's something like that. But now you have 5 years of eligibility. So transfers are a hot thing right now across the NCAA, not just in hockey. Mm-hmm. So it is nice. You can grab a lot of people who are fifth years looking to just maybe get a quick master's degree or just transfer and play somewhere else for a little bit. Maybe that's where they want to end up long term, in a city or wherever. Maybe they want to go home for their fifth year. So it is pretty cool to see a lot of transfers. And then the NCAA has a transfer portal. I think it's been used for a couple of years now. And it makes it a lot easier to transfer. Mm-hmm. So you are seeing a ton of people in that. So it is nice to be able to grab some people who are experienced, who know they don't have the like freshman jitters, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But you also have these freshmen who've been chosen for couple years now.
Yeah.
So it is, the coaches are in, I'm not jealous of coaches. Let's put it that way. You have a lot of decisions to make and hopefully you have enough slots to fill, to put everyone. So, we do have a large class coming in obviously with all those spots to fill, but I think we have one transfer. I'm not really sure exactly what's coming in, mm-hmm. but I've seen them all and I'm like, whoo, that's a big group.
Okay. So it sounds like the phenomenon that you see in basketball and football, it's fairly similar to the hockey then with the transfer portal. Okay.
Yeah.
So on the international side, so you had Canadian, Swiss and French players on your roster. Is there kind of a big push to get more international talent, or is that just something that happens on its own?
I think it happens on its own, but globally the sport is growing, especially in women's hockey in Europe. The development has a lot more money invested into it now. So you're seeing other countries really grow from a youth level, which then will transfer into that senior level. So in a few years, I don't think it's going to be just the US and Canada for a gold medal match. I think you're going to see a lot of bigger contenders because we're seeing a lot more people from different, specifically European countries come in, which is really cool.
Yeah, maybe we'll see Finland in that final soon.
Hey, they're not a bad team.
Yep. Let's hop on to another, I'm going to call it a hot topic, even though we're talking about ice, but around the athletic training community. So going back to my days of exercise science back in the year 2000, Utah State, I was taught RICE, rest, ice, compression, elevation. This is our method for treating acute injuries. The more and more I hear a lot around the community, the less and less people are using ice. Where do you stand on this debate?
Oh boy, I'll be honest. I use it. I'll elevate, I'll compress, I'll do the whole thing. It's not my only technique, though. So I use it in step with a couple other things because you want to speed up recovery as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But and I also don't want somebody to just be in pain. So if we can at least provide a numbing aspect and give them some relief through icing, why not? I use it in step with a lot of other things. I'm not going to completely dismiss it. But I think it's definitely dropped off in my bag of tricks.
Okay. So it's a tool, but it's one of many tools.
Exactly. Yes. That's definitely a better way to put it.
That's one thing I always thought too, was if the physiological aspects are debatable, but the numbing effect and if it can reduce pain, that's something that you just really can't argue with, at least right off the bat.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's hop over to the quick fire round. So I'm going to throw some questions your way and I'm hoping to get some answers from you.
All right. Let's do it.
Okay. Sporting hero growing up.
Mia Hamm.
Cool. Guilty music pleasure.
Unpopular opinion. I don't know. Nickelback.
Okay. Yep.
Why not?
Yeah. Well, it's your guilty music pleasure.
So. All right. I'll say it without a question mark. Nickelback.
Well, I won't lie. The CD in my car right now is actually Enya. That's the biggest mentor in career to date.
I definitely have two there that pop in my head. Sue Geyer was a Springfield College professor of mine, and then David Gish from Texas State.
Okay. Favorite TV show?
Ooh, Friends, all day long.
Wow. Okay. I'm gonna have to go with Seinfeld on that one, but I can respect the Friends bit. It's okay.
I love a good Seinfeld.
Yeah, I did a little Friends. I never fully got into it because I don't know if you can get into both Seinfeld and Friends. I think you had way too much time on your hands. That's
I agree. They're essentially the same thing anyway.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. If you could have been a pro in one sport, what would it be?
Younger me would say soccer, but you know, we just got off some Olympics and I'm all about that curling. I think I still have a chance.
Oh, really? Curling?
I've never curled in my life. It's just a dream.
Yeah, that looks like a lot of fun.
It looks like so much fun.
And the fact that they've turned it into an Olympic sport, I just take my hat off to them. That's awesome.
Exactly. And popular.
Yeah. Yep. Of course, you don't have to go too far, you know, to get across the border there in Canada. So
nope, not far at all.
Chosen superpower.
I've been asked this many times. I will never change my answer. X-ray vision. My job would be so much easier.
So living in Boston, going to have to ask, are we going with clam chowder or lobster bisque?
Clam chowder.
All right.
There's no comparison for it. It's the best.
And do you get the best clam chowder in Boston?
Absolutely.
Okay. I will agree with that one. Okay. So if we hop over to a little bit more on the First Beat side of things, it's always interesting to hear how different teams are using the First Beat sports technology. You have been involved with the program since day one that First Beat arrived. What's the difference like from the first season that you used First Beat to last season? What are like the changes, how you've used the system?
We had no idea what we were doing the first season, I'll be honest. Michelle and I were just kind of figuring it out. We had an awesome intern, Jonah, who was into it as well. So we got pretty lucky. Jonah would ran some stats after, I think, our second year, maybe first, second. It's been a while now. But now we know exactly what we want out of it. We know exactly what each day should look like by using the system. So we went from, all right, let's see what it shows us and pick out some trends. The trends haven't changed and the people have. So it's pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah, I've seen some programs that seems to work the best way that they'll get the system. I won't hear from them for a year. And then in year two, when they have that data, they've done some analysis, then they come back and they have a lot of great questions on, you know, comparing what's happened from the first season to the second season. So sounds like that's kind of what happened there.
Yeah, it's exactly what happened.
What metrics are the most useful for you?
Yeah, we've been using TRIMP for individual management and team management. And that's really what we look at 99.9% of the time. We do have some growth potential now that we're using the different system, not like that laptop one, where there's a couple other metrics we're diving into, looking at the like movement efficiency.
And with the TRIMP, do you know it well enough that if coach hands you the practice plan, could you estimate or have a pretty good guess of what the TRIMP for the team would be?
I could give you on a daily. The names of their drills don't make any sense to me. But I could give you what each day probably looks like, where I know Mondays we're shooting for a certain number. I don't want to give away too many secrets, you know. Tuesdays, we want a higher number. Wednesday, we drop off a little bit. Thursday's a pregame. So we off our data, we don't go over a certain number as well. So I know what each day is going to look like from a trim standpoint.
Okay. And do you use it? Obviously, you use it on ice. Do you also use it in the gym and in other areas?
Sure do. Yep. Every weight room session and every practice.
Okay. I kind of wanted to ask on if we follow up on that a little bit. I have some teams that would only use it on ice or only use it on the court, and they don't record the gym sessions. Why do you include the gym sessions?
Because we want to look at the total volume of what they're doing. Like, we want to make sure that something's not going to put them over the edge. We use the weight room so that we have a total outlook on what they're doing from a load standpoint, and to make sure we're not overdoing or underdoing somebody, and we'll make adjustments as we see the numbers. And we don't want to leave something out because the weight room can be a grind for some people.
Yeah, I agree. I've always said that, of course, it's up to you, but I think the more data, the better, especially when it comes to training, that a gym session might be really light for some people, but as you just mentioned, it could be a really tough session for somebody else, and that would be kind of a red flag for you.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's have a conversation. Let's figure out what's going on there.
Oh, absolutely. And we make that adjustment more often than you think. So it's been really helpful in the gym.
Okay, great. Have you or any of the coaching staff ever worn a first beat sensor during a game?
I'll be honest, we haven't, but I love it. I love that idea.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, do you think maybe Coach Flint would be interested, or do we start, you know, maybe start with some other staff members and move up the chain there?
I'll be honest, I think Dave would love to do it, but I don't think he'd want anyone to see it.
Okay, that's, I think most of the coaches I've spoken to say, well, but why do you need to put that on me? It'll be bright red for the entire game.
And I exactly.
Said, yeah. Yeah, I saw one from this last season, a D1 football coach, and my goodness. I didn't compare, but I swear he had higher load than any of his players.
We do have our backup goalies wearing it during games because you never know when they have to go in. So they always have it on. Mm-hmm. And those girls are cooking.
Oh, really?
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
So much bench energy.
Oh, that's really interesting to know. Is that like a positive energy, or is that like, I'm scared I might get called in right now?
I think it's positive energy.
Okay. So yeah, it's always interesting to see in some sports, like in basketball, when they get to the free throw line, it's, you know, at the end of the game and it's really close. How does their heart rate recover? Is it just beating through their chest trying to get this? Maybe the same thing for hockey. It'd be interesting to see, you know, if that penalty shot was rewarded, how is the goalie right before the player makes his moves, how is the player right before he starts to approach the puck to go?
Goalie data is actually really cool. Dave Flint worked with the U.S. national team before coming into Northeastern. So he's used heart rate stuff before. And he goes, you're going to look at the goalies and think, what the heck is going on inside their brains? Because they're just red. They're bright red for three periods. And then they drop down during intermission and they spike right back up. They're always on. They're always ready. It's like one of the coolest things to see.
Wow. So even when the puck's on the other end, they're still up and red?
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Like they're always at least they're burning pretty high. Mm-hmm. They're not sitting in that like recovery zone.
Okay. That makes sense. I know we've already touched a bit on this, but so speaking of Coach Flint, kind of what is the process of getting the data to the coaches and to the players themselves?
Like I said, Coach Flint does it himself most of the time. Like we get off the ice, he goes up to his office. By then, I should have uploaded the data by then. And he goes to his computer and he looks at it. And that's kind of his ritual. If it's not up by then, he goes home and he looks at it. And it doesn't take long. That's the beauty of this first beat, or it's pretty simple to weed through once you've established what you're looking for. So a lot of times he's like, okay, we're good. Or he highlights some people. And we do the same thing for myself and Jeff, our strength coach. We're all just looking at it each day and just like, okay, what are we looking into going into the next day?
Oh, nice. So that's literally just automated for you. He just takes a look and then you're good to go.
Yeah. Like I said, once a week we meet and we'll talk about some modifications that some people might need. But yeah, it's really like we're all on the same page. And if something's highlighted, we just talk to each other.
Very cool. Finally, I asked this question to those we interview within the hockey community. How would you describe the state of college hockey right now? And where do you see it going in the next few years?
So I can speak to really only women's hockey, but it's growing. It's been a bit of a roller coaster. You had Robert Morris that got cut, and now it's back again for next year. You're adding Stonehill. We just added LIU this past year. So it's definitely growing, and it's nice to see more teams pop up. Women's college hockey is actually pretty small in terms of other NCAA sports. So it's really cool to just see these D1 teams popping up. You're also graduating these awesome like athletes. They're elite athletes, and some of them want to go into coaching. So these programs are starting off with some great coaching talent. And especially when you're having more female coaches, right? So I think we have a lot of amazing women now coaching these programs, and these programs are going to start thriving, right? It's tough to start a program. But places like Merrimack College, they went out and found an amazing coach, and they've just been growing ever since and pretty rapidly.
Yeah, they've done really well too. It's been fun to follow their growth.
Yeah. And we have like a lot of the girls I work with, they grew up playing on boys teams, and now there's youth leagues for women, or I should say for girls. So there's just more opportunity, which is just, it's so great to see across the stage of the growth that is coming as well.
Well, that's huge to have it at the youth level. I mean, That just builds all the way from the ground up.
Exactly.
You touched on it there, but I love the fact to see that Robert Morris and University of Alaska, you saw these programs that got dropped, but the communities all just came together so quickly and so strongly that I don't know if any programs actually didn't come back. I know both Robert Morris, Alaska came back just because alumni stepped in, everybody put money together because the community around those programs, it was great to see that.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, it's just that strong push, the strong voices. It's like, hey, these are good teams, right? So let's step up. It's awesome. I wish North Dakota would bring their team back. But that was a tough loss. They were a great team and had some amazing Olympians graduate from there.
Mm-hmm. But let's go last first beat related question. So kind of what kind of support do you have around you as far as dealing with the data? Because you can get a lot from first beat. And so who else is helping you run the first beat system and get the data where it needs to go?
I've always been a strong advocate of hire people smarter than you. So I'm not the brains of this operation. I just get to live it and enjoy it every day. But I have Kara is an intern with us, and Alex, who's been working with us from a sports science side, running data, which is just without them, honestly, like we wouldn't be growing past the TRIMP aspect. They're pushing for nutrition of what each person needs to refuel between periods. They're pushing for movement efficiency from an individual standpoint. So we've been pushing a lot of team data since we've started with this. But between those two, Jeff, the coaching staff, we've really had the opportunity to grow with our knowledge base and without diving too deep and getting lost in data, which is hard. So Kara and Alex have been doing an awesome job of like what's relevant and then kind of feeding me the data aspect, because I'm not running stats. I would be there all day just trying to figure out the stats. Mm-hmm. And they've just been awesome. Just kind of helping us with this and like, what is our next step? How do we continue growing?
Yeah, it sounds like you guys have a pretty good balance, because you can for sure go down a rabbit hole, because we've got, I've got 40, 50 data points if you really want it, but you know, focusing on the two or three that, you know, actually can make a difference. Like you said, if you're refueling based on energy expenditure, or you're looking for more ways to increase movement efficiency. Yeah, that's awesome to hear. I'm really looking forward to seeing those data sets once you've got this next season or two out.
Yeah, we just went through them this past week. So there's some good stuff coming. I'll keep you updated.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, that's about all the time we have for this week's episode. Katie, this was a blast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. This was a ton of fun for me as well.
If you like this episode and want to hear more like it, make sure to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the First Beat Sports Podcast. For more information about us and our sports monitoring systems, give us a call at 435-363-9533. Or you can send us an email to sports@firstbeat.com. You can also visit us online at www.firstbeat.com. Thanks a lot for listening today, and don't forget to be with us on the next edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast.